Welcome into What in God's Name. She's Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We're doing theological and philosophical reflections on current events and culture.
And it's good to be with you today.
It's nice to see you, Shana.
Good to see you, Chris.
We've got Arlo standing by. Arlo, the
ever
show dog.
Ever ready, always present.
Wearing an orange camouflage. What would that be?
It's counter camouflage. It's anti camouflage. He's wearing his "Please don't shoot me, I'm not a deer" vest.
Jane, I wanted to tell you about some conversations I've been having with regards to What in God's Name. Some people in conversation have told me that our culture is so divided, which is nothing new. Not only is the observation that we're divided, but that there's vested interest in keeping those divisions alive, and that people generate income. It's lucrative to...
It's a cottage industry.
...exacerbate division. And so, as I think about our audience, as we're launching this podcast, the first few episodes, again, thinking about our first few shows, helping people understand what this podcast is about.
That's it ain't about us. That.
We are not about driving division. We are about building bridges. And so what I say about that is that our audience is a niche audience. We're an audience that's not going to be trying to decide what team we're on, so whether they'll listen to us or not, if we're on the right team, but rather people who are interested in bridge building. And so I think it's a niche audience.
I don't know if I agree that it's a niche audience. I think that, or maybe it's a niche audience, but it's a large niche. I think there's a lot of people out there who are really sick and tired of the divisiveness and are looking for some sort of alternative. And certainly I hope we can speak to some of that. I think just the mere fact of having a podcast that is faithful, that is theological, and that is doing social reflection sets us apart. But I'll agree with you that it's a niche, but I think it's a big niche.
I hope so. I hope so. That would certainly be the hope. Okay, enough of that. I just wanted to start there because, you know, people tune into this. People find us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever they're going to find us, Audio Boom.
Yeah, they're going to find us and go, what in God's name is this?
What in God's name is this?
And exactly.
So we want them to, yeah.
Exactly.
We're into bridge building. Today, Shana and I are going to talk about Christmas.
Happy holidays to you. Chris wanted me to sing on the show, so.
There we go. You can sing some more.
I can sing anytime you want.
My thesis today is that Christmas is dying and that Christmas will never die.
Oh, Chris, that's really interesting.
So what I mean by that, Christmas is dying. You and I are old enough to remember that the shopping plazas would not put out their Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving.
Amen, I remember.
And
that was back when the first pterodactyl swallowed my great-grandfather, I think.
So my son would think, back in the dark ages when we used quills for pens and ink pots.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
So one way that Christmas is dying is the blatant commercialization of Christmas.
Yeah, the pornographic consumerism.
Consumerism.
Pornographic consumerism.
Yeah. And so what is lost there is the spiritual meaning, the spiritual value. America is such a big and diverse place, and so it's hard for me to know, with my limited perspective, how Christmas is experienced and felt in different subcultures within America. So I say that as a way of recognizing that my perspective is not necessarily universal to what's going on in the United States. And it's also to say, from my point of view, from what I can see, Christmas is, in our culture, it's an economic moment. It's a get and spend kind of time. And then
it is. So I totally agree with you. And in that sense, Christmas is dying. I awoke the day after Thanksgiving, turned on the TV, saw the news, and there was this story. They did a full 7 minutes, so an entire segment of the news between commercials, 7 minutes, on Black Friday. And that was the opening segment. Black Friday. And then they went to commercial. They came back. They did another couple of stories. And then onward to, oh, the Cal firefighters served Thanksgiving dinner to a whole bunch of people who had no place to go because their communities had burned to the ground. These are the same Cal firefighters who have been fighting those blazes out there, the same Cal firefighters who probably suffered incomprehensible loss themselves, were now serving this meal to people. And finally, the announcer said something like, oh, you know, that's really what this season is all about. And I thought to myself, yeah, it is what the season's all about. So why didn't you start with that story instead of, you know, burying it further down in the news? So, yeah, there is an extent to which that is true. And then interestingly, paired with some of that consumerism, but also not, is that segment that's, you know, the Toys for Tots runs and the Christmas Trees for Veterans runs and the increase in giving. I mean, we actually now have a holiday, right? Giving Tuesday. We have Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and Giving Tuesday. Interesting that giving comes at the very end, but okay, we'll take it where we can. So there is at least some vestige of the spirit of the holiday. You know, we do see giving and homeless shelters and people's participation in serving meals to the homeless increase at this time of year. Maybe, I don't know if that's what you meant when you were thinking about the Christmas that will never die.
It wasn't, but you often help me see the brighter side of things, so I appreciate that. Christmas will never die, I meant more in terms of that the story of God coming to be on earth and to dwell with us is a story that will never die. And a story that has a baby at the center of it will never die.
It's funny that that's the one you see as the one that will never die, because that's the aspect of the holiday that is most specifically religious and is the core of the story and is the one that was in the beginning and in my mind will forever be at the most risk, at the high, you know, it is the most vulnerable, ergo the one most likely to be sacrificed first. So that's interesting. I mean, hopeful. Boy, I would like to believe that's true. Absolutely.
That's so interesting because the examples that you have put forward, if they become disconnected from the original generosity. So this is Christian theology now for all mm-hmm. of you who want to partake.
Who
and
tuned
who are
into
curious,
this podcast for a little Christian theology.
And you might be curious. The first generosity is God's generosity to incarnate.
Incarnate. God with us, Emmanuel.
God with us.
Yeah.
Why would God want to do that? Because of a generous love to mm-hmm. to want to be in solidarity with humanity.
And or just out of sheer curiosity.
Yes. Well, that too, which is its own kind of generosity. So if that's, from a Christian point of view, if that's the original generosity, then human giving, all those examples you mentioned are derivative of that. I would say that the examples of human generosity, human goodness, human giving in this time of Christmas, that is more vulnerable because it relies on the goodness of human beings.
See, and I think the story is vulnerable. I think the goodness in humanity is a given. That's a pretty bold statement to be making, particularly in these times, I realize. But in every difficult place in the world, in every situation that would shatter our hearts into a thousand pieces, there are people running in to help. And I see that over and over again. I mean, in part because of the work I do with fire departments and emergency medical services and police officers. And also, just watching, just looking, just listening, there's always somebody on the ground who's trying to make a difference. And I mean, the last people out are usually the journalists, you know, putting their lives on the line for the story, you know, to save the story, that the story has to be known. Whereas I guess, and this may be maybe shocking to some of our listeners, and it might even be offensive to some, so I want to couch what I'm about to say because it's not my intention to offend. But I guess for me, it matters less which story is the motivating force for us. I think the Christian story is incredibly compelling, and we know that it's not the only story out there. For Jewish people, it's the notion of tikkun olam, our obligation to leave the world better than we found it. You know, for people who are really into the outdoors, and they're into, you know, they're all about the environment, and, you know, it's leave no trace. You know, everybody's got their story, and I am less concerned with what we call it and more concerned that it continue, that the spark of divinity in all of us continues to be fanned, that those embers are fanned and continue to flame. That having been said, it does irk me to see the misappropriation of Christmas.
Yeah.
So if it's not going to be about the baby Jesus, if it's not going to be about Emmanuel, if it's not going to be about, you know, doing the Advent season of preparation and going deep within to discover our yearning, the place where our souls ache for something so that we can be prepared to receive this unexpected gift that isn't anything that we wanted and doesn't even look like it's going to work, for crying out loud. If that's not what it's about, then let's call it something else. Because, you know, out here in the realm of political correctness, it's not okay to misappropriate traditions. But it seems to me that, and this is a particular sore spot for me, is that when it comes to Christianity, it feels like sort of anything can be misappropriated. You know, Easter's all about the Cadbury eggs, and, you know, Christmas is all about K Jewelers. And I don't know about you, Chris, but, you know, I will testify, I'll bear witness right here, right now, no kiss of mine has ever begun, middled, or ended with anything named Kay. I don't even know who she is. You know, this whole thing about, you know, buying a Mercedes-Benz for your loved one. I mean, you know, not only can most of us not afford that, but what does that have to do with Christmas? So it just feels like, you know, part of the reason I love Advent and Lent is because they're not Hallmark holidays. There's no greeting card. There's no stuff you have to buy for the holiday, or in fact, anything you need to go out and do. You don't have to host parties, send cards.
Right.
Advent and Lent are they're reflective times.
So when you talk about them being misappropriated, they're being misappropriated by the commercial culture.
Yes. I think, you know, to their credit and bless their hearts, I think the vast majority of Americans really feel it is their civic obligation, their civic duty to go out during the season and lay their financial offerings at the altars of the gods of Victoria's Secret and Amazon. You know, but they have to play their part as American citizens in order to, you know, ensure that the god of the stock market is kind to all of us in the coming year.
The wonderful Charlie Brown Christmas special, that TV cartoon TV thing that.
And Linus's moment.
Well, okay.
In the spotlight.
But, and before that.
And before
and
that.
And before that, Snoopy has the doghouse all done up in the lights. And Snoopy has won first prize, I believe, if I'm remembering this correctly. Like,
it's been a long time since I saw it, but I think he does.
Yeah. He's like, and Charlie
it's competition.
Brown. It's a competition. It's gaudy. It's lights. It's. And do you remember what Charlie Brown says? He says, oh, my dog has gone commercial.
Ah, yes.
Even my dog.
Even my dog.
Charlie Brown
commercial.
Charlie Brown is like looking for this deeper meaning.
Yeah.
This more significance than commercialism to Christmas. And then
Linus's moment.
Linus gives it.
His recounting of Luke.
And so that's
so
to me,
sweet.
That's that gets to my sense of Christmas is dying and Christmas will never die. There's something about Linus speaks to Christmas will never die.
So then, but is that about Christmas or is that about Christianity?
Tell me more about the distinction you're making.
Well, Christmas is a Christian holiday.
Yes.
And it has been misappropriated and commercialized and exploited by thousands.
Yes.
That having been said, would we still call it Christmas, would we recognize it as Christmas 1,000 years from now if there was simply the spirit of generosity and giving, but no story of the baby Jesus? That'd be a great Christian sci-fi 2,000 years into the future, there's this celebration and it involves lights and giving and people stop warring for a day with one another, but nobody knows why.
Yeah, I don't think it would be Christmas without Linus,
without Linus, without the story.
It might be something wonderful. It might be something good. And it wouldn't be Christmas.
So, you know, so I come back to this thing about, yeah, the story matters. I mean, for it to be Christmas, the story matters. The story about God coming in the form of a babe and or this baby that everybody was hoping would be all that in a bag of chips. And guess what? He grew up and he was. You know, however, the multiple ways that Christians have of understanding that story, it still has to have the story to be Christmas.
Yeah, I think so.
And when we had started talking about this segment, I had been laughing a little bit as tongue-in-cheek and talking about the Christmas Nazis, those Christians who insist that everybody say Merry Christmas, you know, and we're going to have a Christmas fair. It's not a holiday fair, and you have to say Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays. And the more I think about it, the more I think I understand where they're coming from. I still don't think their perspective will win many adherents. I don't think browbeating people with a perspective is the way to win them over to it. But I do understand the sense of having something precious, feeling like something that is very precious to you, being exploited and wanting to fight to hold on to some of that. The challenging thing is that, of course, to really, you know, to really sell this story now as then requires a deep faithfulness on the part of the teller, on the part of the storyteller. Someone who is themselves deeply faithful, who has walked through the liturgical calendar year in and year out and understands how the season of Advent so beautifully, we go so deep into a yearning and a waiting and a preparing for relief from our suffering, and we get not this mighty military conqueror, but this, like, what? We got a baby? Like, this seems like a booby prize. Yeah, I mean, the story is at risk. The story is as vulnerable now as the baby ever was.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. I hope it does last forever.
Yeah, well. I wanted to talk a little bit about Advent with you because you've mentioned it a couple of times, and many people do not know what Advent is.
Oh, man. Chris, my first exposure to Advent, I had graduated seminary and gotten hired by a Christian church. Now, I was raised culturally Jewish, went to seminary to be a Unitarian Universalist minister, chose a Christian seminary to overcome my fear of all things Christian, and overshot the mark a little bit. Came out, am working in this Christian church, and as a director of Christian education, and, you know, everybody's running around going, Shana, what are we going to do for Advent? I was like, well, first somebody's going to tell me what it is, and then I'll tell you what we're doing about it. It was a year of vocational whack-a-mole. It was fabulous. But I was so surprised and so moved that Christians have this, like, whole season before Christmas to prepare to receive the excitement and the glory and the wonder and the, wow, really, of Christmas. And I thought it was awesome because there's no Hallmark cards or, you know, that one's not an exploited.
It's not the baby in the manger. It's not the joy of Deck the Halls. It's a much more somber flavor to the season of Advent. And that is countercultural.
Very countercultural.
A lot of Christians don't even want to deal with Advent.
Yeah, there's always that battle in your church about how come we're not singing Christmas music? Yeah, everything is happy clappy.
Right.
Which is understandable when people are under strain and under a tremendous amount of pressure. I think the inclination, the sort of instinct, it is intuitive to go towards the light. I think the thing that is counterintuitive and is contained in many faith traditions is that call to embrace the dark. Embrace the dark.
That's so true.
So that we can come into the light.
That's so true. That's so true. And I think part of the reason that this time of year can be so difficult for people is because the culture is all bright lights and by and everything's happy and the whole smiley face. There's a deep knowledge, I think, in human beings of the need to go into the dark. And when that need is not addressed, or if that need doesn't get a container for it to be safely explored, then depression
that
results.
It manifests as depression.
It comes as depression.
Mental health disorders or opium addiction, addiction to opiates or
So
suicide or, you know, any of the other plagues that are,
Right. So in that way, our culture isn't so much anti-Christmas as it is anti-Advent.
Mm.
But that diminishes Christmas because if there's no going into the dark, then, you know, it's that whole old thing of you need to know what the dark is for the light to have power and to know the light more deeply. You need to know the dark. This concludes part one of our two-part show, Christmas is Dying and Christmas Will Never Die. Part two of this show will go live next Thursday, December 13th. What in God's name values being curious, going deep, and shedding light on current events and culture? Join us in supporting these values and these kinds of conversations. Join us by subscribing to What in God's Name on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Share our podcast with your friends and acquaintances. And if you want to receive What in God's Name via email, go to our website, whatingods.com. That's all one word, WHATINGODS. No capital letters, no apostrophes, just whatingods.com. Click on the How to Listen tab. Scroll down to the button that says Receive an Email with a Link and enter your email address and click the button. And as if by magic, you will receive What in God's Name by email. Finally, check out our Facebook page or Instagram, What in God's Name. We have a picture of our show dog, Shayna's dog, Arlo. We have a picture of Arlo reading the Tao Te Ching. In other words, it's a picture of a Shih Tzu reading Lao Tzu.